Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The trial of Karen Reed about to get underway, and there's a lot of new things that are going to be in the sequel trial, things that we didn't hear in the first trial. And one of those big things is going to be a lot of clips from a lot of interviews. You know, the ones that we've been talking about for like the last 6-7 months, those seemingly lack of empathy interviews, cold, callous responses to people in this case that, you know, probably don't deserve the cold callousness that they're receiving. It's not probably going to play super well for Karen. I know they're not super happy about it, but here to help us break this all down and understand what it means in court, it is Bob Mata, host of the podcast Defense Diaries and defense attorney. All those clips, they're going in.
Was you had to know that Brennan was going to be looking to get all those clips in. And yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know how much, if anything, that they prove, but mm-hmm. It's not a good look.
It certainly doesn't make her a murderer. I've said that every time. I mean, because this trial, the first one, really seemed to be based more on personality than anything else, and that being that of Proctor and, you know, possible cover-up and things of that nature. This pulls her right down there, if not even lower, with some of the things that she's publicly said. And the nightmare of it all is none of it needed to happen. This is all her doing. Her own words, I feel, are, I don't know if they're going to sink her into the place of being convicted of murder, but it's certainly not going to help you with a jury that, you know, they're human beings. And if something's going to tip the scale to getting you convicted of murder, half of the things you said might just do that. It doesn't show you murdered him at all. But it just shows you not being, I think, what many people would consider like a decent human being.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what she's going to allow in. Yeah. If she's going to allow in, I think what we're going to end up seeing is a lot of opening the door threats from Judge Cannone to the defense, in that she's going to say, look, all right, if you intend on pointing the finger at these witnesses the way that you did the first trial, mm-hmm. I'm going to consider that to be opening the door in terms of getting specifically Reed statements about them mm-hmm. in from the interviews. You know what I mean? It's like, excuse me. if she's of the mindset that, look, if you're not pointing the finger at those folks, then I really don't see how Karen sure. talking about them is relevant.
Mm-hmm.
If you make it relevant
yeah.
by talking about them in terms of pointing the finger as third party culprits, then it becomes relevant.
Yeah.
And then I think that they're going to have to deal with this concept of, because Brennan might be putting these motions in order to kind of push a narrative away from their third party culprit.
Sure.
Where he doesn't necessarily want to have to get into this stuff
mm-hmm.
because it's question. I mean, she's certainly not making any admissions.
No,
but it makes her look bad, you know? So just in terms of lack of empathy, I mean, in Karen's mind, Karen has fully bought into the concept that these folks are the culprits. So, yeah. I mean, from her perspective, you can understand why she wanted to speak out on it, why she's mm-hmm. not feeling empathy. I mean, if yeah. you look at it from her perspective and she truly believes that something happened to John in that house,
yeah,
which I think at this point she fully does.
Yeah.
Then, you know, I mean, it kind of is what it is. You know, I mean, she's allowed yeah. to have her opinion. It is sure. her life on the line. And if she thinks that they did something in there, who am I to say that they didn't, you know? I mean, yeah. that's she's allowed to have her own opinion on things, and it is her life on the line.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, I could see a world and why she'd be upset and why she wouldn't feel empathetic towards them if, in fact, that's what she believes, which I think she does. So,
and that's
how it plays out at trial. It's going to be interesting.
That's the interesting part, because she's certainly entitled to her own sets of beliefs and how she thinks things played out there. Yeah, totally. But she's not entitled to her own sets of facts. And that's the problem with a lot of this, because I don't know what Karen believes to be fact, because what she's stated as fact has changed dramatically in so yeah. many aspects of this case as it continued forward. And those facts always just happen to fit her narrative perfectly. It's never, oh, I was wrong in this, or this memory came back to me. Because look, I mean, if you're blackout drunk, those memories aren't coming back to you. Your brain didn't record them. So they're not coming back to you. Now you can try and piece things together. Your brain will try and insert things into the blanks like Mad Libs that aren't really there because they're not coming from your memory. And you may end up believing them. That's how our brains function. But we're talking not just like small little pieces of, oh yeah, I was at that house. We're talking full narratives, long-term narratives, detailed narratives about what happened the night. I mean, specifically, let's talk about the drop-off, because initially it's, I don't remember dropping him off. Last time I saw him was at the waterfall. Then it goes to, well, I dropped him off. I didn't see him go in. Then it goes to, well, he walked up to the house and he stuck his head in the door. Then it goes to, oh, I watched him walk into the house and I knew he was safe. So then I went home because I was tired. And then I saw him go in the house and I went home because I was really angry at him that he didn't come out and signal me. It's a lot of different stories for the exact same moment in time. And if anyone who's ever had the moment of drinking and kind of like trying to piece pieces back together, that's a lot of changes. That's not just, oh yeah, I was there. This is yeah. like full-blown narrative changing to fit your story. I don't know how you argue that in court when it changes that dramatically. And we're going to see all these. We're going to see the shift. And I think that's the damning part to this. It doesn't necessarily point to any sort of mission of him killing him, but it certainly points to various changes in story. And you also do have the comment in there, he didn't look mortally wounded. From Dateline, which seemed to slip in there kind of Freudianly, that's a lot. That's a lot of weird things that a jury did not hear in round one. How do you think this is all going to play this time?
It depends. It depends on what Canone's going to let in and what she's going to keep out. Now, those prior inconsistent statements, which there are a lot of them, the question becomes for the state or the Commonwealth, how are they getting them in? Because typically you're getting prior inconsistent statements in when she testifies, mm-hmm. if she testifies,
yeah.
that's when you can impeach her. You know, the old saying is yeah. you can impeach anybody with a ham sandwich. And that is where you would, you know, attempt to nail her to the cross if you're the Commonwealth, by just pointing out all the times that she's changed her story. Mm-hmm. Without her getting on the stand, if it's not considered to be a statement against interest, mm-hmm. I don't know how they're getting it in. So it is problematic as it is for Karen on in the sense that it doesn't make her look good in terms mm-hmm. of the story changing. I don't know how Hank Brennan's getting it in, because what's not going to happen is he's just not going to be able to play the videos from the interviews mm-hmm. in kind of a summary fashion. Say, okay, well, here's the part where yeah. Karen said this. Here's the part where Karen said that. I mean, that's not how this thing works.
Could you bring someone in that was in relation to the production of these and go, is this what happened? Is this how,
you know? Hearsay. It's hearsay.
But it's on video.
Yeah, but it's still an out-of-court statement
yeah. being
offered for the truth of the matter it asserts. Even if Brennan says, well, it's not, we're not offering it for the truth of the matter that John O'Keefe actually walked into the house.
Okay.
We're offering it to show the fact that she's changed her story four times. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's going to be interesting. But having a producer or mm-hmm. the interviewer come in and try to testify it, That's not going to work. I mean, yeah. that's just straight up. That's double hearsay.
Okay.
You know, I mean, so it'll be interesting how they get it in. It's like, I don't know how people think it's going to play out, well, but
if she's going
the real question becomes
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
Has this potential for this stuff coming in, and less the inconsistencies, but more just her statements about the other witnesses, wherein again, if Canone says you've opened the door by introducing these people as third-party culprits, these witnesses, now I'm allowing him to get this stuff in. And that creates a situation where the defense is like, man, Karen, we think you have to testify. You have to get up there and try to mitigate this. Mm-hmm. Then it creates an entirely different scenario. Because I think where it stands right now, the defense, and more importantly, Karen Reed, has no intention on getting on that stand.
Yeah.
You know, because if she gets on that stand, all of it comes in.
Yeah.
You know, anything inconsistent that she said is coming in. So and again, that's really a way that Brennan's going to be able to kind of dictate whether or not Karen Reed intends on taking the stand. Mm-hmm. If you have enough that could really harm her in the eyes of the jury, if you're Brennan and you're filing these motions and you know that it exists out there and he's pinpointing all the different parts in all the different interviews that could be really damaging, that is going to push Karen into a position where she's like, well, shit, I'm not getting up there to get hammered, mm-hmm. you know? So, I mean, it's really interesting, man. But like in terms of how he's going to get some of it in is yet to be determined. I mean, that's ultimately going to be Canone's call. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, I think that there is going to be an element of opening the door with respect to things that were said about the witnesses in the case, the mm-hmm. McCabes and the Alberts and all yeah. those folks. And, you know, whether or not she's going to allow that in will, I think, to be dependent on what the defense does to a certain extent.
It's going to be very fascinating to see how that gets in. I mean, I can see several different ways if this happens or that happens, which, again, it's hard to predict exactly how that all will play out, but we will certainly see. What are some of the pieces in this? Obviously, we've talked about the videos, all those clips that are not good looking that could show up in here. Where do you think this is going to play out in terms of how the defense of Karen Reed is going to play this time? Do you think they're still going to be going hard on the theory that he was beat up in the Alberts home and the 17-year-olds involved and the dogs involved? And I mean, basically everything last time, or are they going to have to really pull that back to protect themselves from all the damning evidence from the other side that could be brought in as well? It's a tough one. It's a tightrope this round.
It is. I don't know, man. Like that's going to be one that I'm just going to have to wait and see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, I just don't. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how this will all play out. I do imagine that some way, shape, or form, this stuff is going to be getting in. I mean, there will be some way. I mean, let me ask you this. if they're going to go down the road and Karen Reed's story, because they have to have some sort of story. I mean, they technically don't, but they go down the story of Karen Reed saw him get into the house. Mm-hmm. If the defense of Karen Reed introduces that theory into this, that this is what we believe happened, would that right there not open the door to bring out the contradictory statements of, well, that's not what Karen said before?
100%. But the question becomes, how do you get that in?
Yeah, that is the question. Close. Can you bring things like that in a closing? I mean, I know I'm asking an amateur question, but I'm the amateur over here. You're the defense attorney.
No, you can only argue what's evidence in the case.
Yeah.
Like you can't argue.
Well, I mean, it is evidence in the case. It's being brought in. But how do you, I mean, if you're going to say.
Well, how is it being brought in?
That's the question.
Short of Karen testifying.
Yeah.
There's no other witness who is going to say that John O'Keefe went into that house. The only person on the planet that is saying that is Karen.
Sure.
So short of her getting on the stand and saying, I saw John go into the house. Mm-hmm. I waited a few minutes for him to call me to tell me it's all good so I could leave. And then I left.
Yeah.
That whole story. How is it getting in?
That's
it,
a good question.
For Karen getting on the stand.
Yeah.
That's the only way it can get in. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, you could use inconsistent statements to impeach people left and right. But like you've got to be impeaching them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So like that's my question on how they come in. I mean, you can impeach people with anything.
Yeah.
And inconsistent statements are the number one thing to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so but the question becomes is how are they getting them in? And especially if they're not statements that are really inculpatory to her.
Mm-hmm.
Like her saying that John went in isn't inculpatory to Karen.
Sure.
It's exculpatory.
Exculpatory.
Yeah. So like I cannot wrap my mind around how he's going to be able to get it in short of her testifying. So like that whole dynamic, man, is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Like what the way that Brendan's trying to use these pieces in terms of trying to force hands is really, really interesting. And it's like, we're going to see how it plays out. And it's going to obviously be dependent on the way that Cannone rules.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it doesn't make her a murderer. It points to someone who doesn't want to accept responsibility, but again, not responsibility even necessarily for a murder, not wanting responsibility for not remembering what happened. And that's where it gets so iffy, because I think no one truly knows exactly what happened out there that night. Could she have clipped him? Maybe. There's certainly that is a possibility in the line of options of what could have happened. But those statements don't necessarily show that she did that either. It just shows someone who doesn't want to be even considered to have any sort of responsibility for that. So that's the other element. It's not a trial of Karen Reed's a bad person or is Karen Reed a narcissist, right? Like that doesn't matter. That doesn't make a person a murderer. It doesn't make him to be locked up in prison. It just makes them, you know, not the nicest person in the world, or maybe.
Yeah,
not,
I mean, yeah. Like it's easy to sit here and kind of poke at yeah. somebody whose life has been on the line
yeah.
for going on 4 years. I mean, like if you were like I think that the biggest takeaway from this is that everybody that night was shit-faced.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah.
Not just Karen Reed.
Everyone.
Not just John yeah. Keefe, but everybody in that house. I don't think any of them are reliable witnesses
yeah.
at all. I think that it was a day of day drinking that turned into a night of night drinking.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a bunch of people that really have no idea what went down and when it went down.
Yeah.
And that includes Karen. That includes John. That includes the people in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing that's so frustrating about this case is we're never going to know because nobody's memory is ever going to get better.
Yeah.
So if you cannot rely on the science in this case, which is the best evidence, that the vehicle itself, the damage to the vehicle and the injuries to John O'Keefe are far and away the most powerful evidence in this case.
Yeah.
Everything else to me is just white noise because it doesn't really matter. I've said it a million times. If I were trying this case, I wouldn't touch the third party culprit shit.
Yeah.
I would stick to the facts of John O'Keefe's body does not look like a body that was hit by a 6,000-pound vehicle, period, yeah. End of conversation. And that the damage to that vehicle does not look like it struck a human being mm-hmm. going 24 miles an hour in reverse.
Yeah,
I don't know if you've ever been in an automobile accident. I hit a deer mm-hmm. going probably 7 miles an hour in my old Chrysler 300.
Yeah.
And it completely destroyed my front end. Mm-hmm. It's 7 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Like I barely, and it killed the deer.
Yeah.
It's 7 miles an hour. Like I
think of that. So, it's like, yeah. Parking lot speed.
Parking lot speed. And yeah. it totally, cause it was a 200-pound deer mm-hmm. and you know, I hit it and it caved it. Like it went into my radiator. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't me plowing into a deer at 20 plus miles an hour. I yeah. was just starting to reaccelerate. So those are the things that I look at as a defense attorney when I'm trying to get a not guilty mm-hmm. and I'm going to lean into reasonable doubt
yeah.
because I think it just lives and breathes in this case. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, they've created the situation where they've made this case so much harder yes. for themselves.
Yeah.
By introducing this stuff. And look, I get the fact that at this point, the lawyers and Karen all believe that they've solved this thing and that something did happen inside that house. I understand it. And if something did happen in that house, then they deserve to be punished. The question is, how are they ever going to prove it?
Yeah.
They would have the same issue proving a case against those folks in that house
sure.
as they do proving a case against Karen Reed. It's never, the case is never getting any better.
Yeah.
The facts are never getting any clearer. So to me, what you do is you focus on the things that we know. And we know what the damage was to that vehicle, kind of. But what we definitely know are the injuries to John O'Keefe.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like to me, you know, like the injuries just have never, like if you can explain to me in a way that it makes sense, that he was sideswiped mm-hmm. and how he ends up 15 feet into the yard, go for it. You know, sure. like convince me. I don't know what those injuries on his arm are, but they sure the hell don't look like they came from him being struck by a motor vehicle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like if he was run over and road rashed, maybe, but where are the matching damage holes to the sweater or the hoodies?
Sure.
You know, we've got a few punctate wounds. That is not what your clothes look like if you've like gotten road rash from getting dragged on a road. It's just not what it looks like, dude. So like where's the bruise? Like all the things that we've talked about for nothing has changed with that. Nothing.
I'm going to show this. I've been kind of holding this. And I know there's tons of videos out there showing, you know, here's how it could have possibly happened. But I saw one the other day, a listener sent this to me. And I'm like, that's an interesting one. Like, cause she talks about her 3-point turn and things of that. Just take a look at this. And this is, I thought it really gave some light into how maybe some of those arm injuries took place. The scratches, you know, where they say it looks like a dog mark, but it could mm-hmm. also be, you know, shards of plastic that could cause it if you're, you know, crawling through it. Again, this is not my video. This is on YouTube. Let's just take a quick look at this. And I want to get your thoughts. And let's watch this for a moment. So this is Karen doing the 3-point turn. See the slight side swipe there. Probably didn't even realize. Backing up, maybe knocking him again. Again, not possibly even realizing it. But again, didn't look mortally wounded. So he's could have been laying there for a little bit, kind of in shock as to what just happened. I think here's a little more in-depth run of the video. Okay, here it is. Here's getting out for those listening. Drink in hand. Starts walking up to the side of the car, maybe going over to say something to the window. She's leaving. Maybe he falls over. Throws a drink at the back of the car. We've talked about that before, which may be where the taillight could have happened. Mm-hmm. and then proceeds to kind of crawl through the yard to get to his phone through maybe that debris field of plastic from the broken taillight, if that's what happened. And eventually that's where John dies.
Wouldn't that be the bottom of his forearm? If you're kind of like,
that was my first thought too. But if you're struck, and maybe this is not in the greatest shape at that moment. And you know, if you're going through that debris field, you would hit forearm, but I think you might also get a bit of side swipe through that if you're just kind of in that sort of incapacitated position. I don't see it being impossible. I don't see it. What was your thoughts on that one?
If I'm the state,
yeah,
on the Commonwealth, I'm not throwing that shit up there.
No? I mean, do you think they're going to show anything up there? They're going to show any sort of reconstruction of what happened? Because, I mean, it's...
I don't know. Because,
Because I think he could have gotten those injuries from not even the taillight, just fucking sticks or something on the ground, just whatever's in someone's yard in that time of the year when you're not maintaining your yard, and you get scratched up if you're literally crawling through the yard. But again, I don't know. That's the question. How did he get there? I don't think it's a crazy idea that he fell and had nothing to do with the vehicle. Gets up, you know, kind of shocked, you know, goes over, sits down for a minute, picks up his phone or whatever, and tries to kind of gain his, you know, senses. And then, you know, the injuries of falling take place, and he succumbs to that.
Yeah, I don't.
And then the coyote comes over.
I mean, the injuries on the arm are the most mysterious things to me in terms of, I just like a debris feel. Like, how the fuck is that plastic getting 10 feet into the yard?
Well, that too. Yeah.
I mean, come on, dude.
I know.
Like, we have to use common sense.
I know.
Like, to me, though, the whole thing is, if Proctor isn't the one who planted it, then to me, the most reasonable explanation has always been that the plow tossed it up there.
Sure.
When the plow came through.
Yeah.
I don't know how many feet. I mean, I live in a snowy area.
Yeah.
I know that plows
can propel shit. You know, they can.
There's no question. Yeah. When they're coming in 15, 20 miles an hour and they got that blade tilted.
Yeah.
I mean, they're getting shit over to the side of the road.
Yeah.
How far that kind of stuff would fly. I don't think it's beyond the scope of reason
to
think that it would flow 10 feet. But
I would say,
at that point, John O'Keefe's already there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The debris field doesn't exist. I don't know.
Yeah, there's just so many inconsistencies. But yeah, having grown up there too, you get 10 feet into your yard in a really snowy time is going to be the debris of whatever the plow flew up onto the side of your yard. 10 feet in, it's sparser. At the beginning, it's the big, you know, mountain that it plows up. But that's how it works if you watch a plow in really snowy environments. It flies. Things fly off the road. So, I mean, I think that could be an explanation. But again, does any of it come to us without a reasonable doubt? And that's at the end of the day, I don't think it does.
That's where I live, dude.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, I can't pretend to know what happened that night. I wasn't fucking there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, all I could do is opine theories just like everybody else. And, you know, I mean, my theory for a year has been something happened wherein he just slipped and busted his head open. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's that situation where she's backing up. And like he's jumping out of the way and he does whip the, he's like, you fucking bitch, and whips the glass in the back. Like, you know, when she's coming back, cause in the action of doing that, cause he's hammered, he slips, cracks his head on the curb.
Yeah.
And then gets up and staggers and falls. I don't know.
I mean, that seems the most plausible to me of anything.
It really does to me too, man. And people are like, well, where do the arm things come? People hate my coyote shit. I don't give a fuck. I'm not going to die on the coyote hill, but don't sit here and tell me it's not a possibility.
It is a possibility. They
tried to drag him.
Yeah.
Into like coyotes just don't eat their shit out in like open spaces. They try to drag it.
Yeah.
He's 200 plus pounds. Like a small coyote's not going to be able to drag him.
Yeah.
So it might've been a thing where it's trying to pull him out and it can't do it. And it fucking dips.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or any dog for that matter. Honestly, people letting their dog out before the snow comes in late at night. Hey, and you don't watch it. You're like, it just comes back. And some dog found him out there dead. And yeah, dogs are going to be dogs. They're going to bite at things that are dead. They're going to look at it. They might drag it a little bit. It could be anything. And could it have been Chloe? Not in a I'm going to attack you and kill you sort of way. More of a let's let the dog out. And that exact same thing sort of happens. What about the dog? Because there is the cast of the dog, the mouth cast, and I believe that can be brought in this round. I think it might be brought in this round. What is your thoughts on that? Because that part was never part of this originally. And the dog's still alive, too.
Right. Well, I think it's problematic for Dr. Russell just because she didn't make comparisons. At least when she was on the stand the most recent time, she had still not decided to make a comparison or look at it to see how they the cast looked in comparison to the theoretical bite marks. I mean, that's a problem for her on cross.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, like I have never understood why any expert was kind of like landing on that those were teeth marks when to me it just seemed way more likely that they were claw marks. They just don't look like. I mean, you're going to have the punctates, you know, like where you're having the teeth in and you're tearing, you know, I mean, if you're, I don't know, like the only part that ever looked like teeth was kind of the part around the elbow, closest to the elbow. Yeah.
And here's
to
the
me,
two.
The other things look like scratches.
They do. And I have it up on screen here. And there's the two versions of it. One that seems to have a little more coloration to it, and then there's kind of a more raw image of it. And when you look at the more raw image of it here, these are not deep injuries. These just look like scratches, like, you know, you rug burn or something almost. That looks, those look a little deeper, but the less, you know, enhanced image, if you will, the one that's not so colorized, the one that looks more raw, they don't look that horrific, honestly. They don't necessarily look like something dug into you, like a dog or a coyote dug into you and drug you. But I see what you're saying up here on the shoulder. Those
I mean,
too, but like, they don't look like teeth marks.
I've got it right. That's what I'm saying. Like I've got a 70-pound, you know, Siberian Husky slash Shar Pei, who unfortunately has very long claws.
Yeah.
And like in the times when I'm wrestling and playing with them, you know, and he uses his arms a lot, he's caught me quite a few times with just his claws, just play, like not in, even in an aggressive manner, but just playing. And they don't look too dissimilar from that. I mean, like they, you know, I'll get the raised, you know, like kind of the raised skin from when they do the scratch.
Sure.
And I've had it a couple times where he's like definitely drawn a little blood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, they kind of look very similar to that.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know, man. Like what I don't know or what I feel like I do know is that the taillight didn't explode and cause those injuries.
No,
that didn't happen. Like that didn't happen. I like John O'Keefe wasn't injured from something underneath the vehicle.
Yeah.
Like I reject that totally.
I don't think he was drugged by the vehicle or anything like
that. No, any of that shit. So I don't know, man. Like it's the thing about this case is no matter what the verdict is, we're never going to really know the answer.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
We're never going to know.
And by the time AI evolves enough where pets can testify against their owners in court, Chloe will be dead.
Damn it. That would be amazing.
I don't know how far off that is. I mean, it sounds crazy, but did you think we were able to do today what we're able to do with stuff? I mean, no. That I was almost going to do as an April Fool's joke on here. I was going to do a segment where it was like new technology allowing pets to like testify in court.
Yeah.
That would be exciting. But yeah. Karen Reed.
Hold on, T.
Yeah.
Allison, is that you? I'm recording. what do you need? All right. Sorry.
You're fine. Yeah. Trial of Karen Reed. There's going to be a lot to discuss in the coming weeks.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams, whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.